This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Little Gold Men, the award season podcast from Vanity Fair.
It's such an honor to present this next award.
And here are the nominees.
And the Oscar goes to...
And the Oscar goes to...
And I can't deny the fact that you like me right now. You like me.
I'm the king of the world.
There's a mistake. Moonlight, you guys won Best Picture.
I'm Katie Rich, and I'm here on our Tuesday interview episode to set up our colleague Hilary Busis's interview with Bill Hader, the creator and star of Barry, which is returning for its third season on HBO on April 24th. Bill Hader has won the Best Actor in a Comedy Series Emmy twice for his performance. I think Barry is probably one of the most anticipated returning shows coming back this spring. So let's hear Hilary's conversation with Bill Hader.
All right, Bill Hader, hello. Thank you for coming on and talking to me about Barry.
Oh, hello. Nice to meet you.
maybe we should start by kind of rewinding a little bit. I heard that you guys did your season three table read and then the world immediately shut down. Was that the timeline?
Yeah. That's pretty much it. Yeah, we did our table read for the first two episodes of season three. And then I think the next day is when the NBA stopped at season. And I remember Aida Rogers, the producer, and I looking at each other going, oh, no.
Oh, yeah. It was like that and Tom Hanks, I think, on the same day.
Yeah. Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson got sick. And then it was like, oh, man, what's going on? And then I remember driving back from where we had our table read and seeing lines outside the grocery store and going, oh, no.
Suddenly we've stepped into a zombie movie. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
So during the lockdown, during the shutdown, did you significantly rework what season three was going to be? Like, how much did you change it?
Actually, quite a lot. I mean, the tent poles were all there. The bigger pieces of it kind of remained the same from our first writers' meeting, to be honest. I remember kind of going, well, maybe the season is this. And then that pretty much stayed the same. But actually, what it was writing season four. We decided, like, well, let's write season four since we have all this time now. And then in writing season four, it was like, oh, you know what? Maybe if we do this, then this will work. And three, if we set this up, or a storyline in four would start to take shape that was a little more interesting if it was different in three, so it could all feel as one a piece.
Do you feel like it got darker? Is it less funny than the version that existed pre-2020?
Yeah, I mean, the season was always going to be darker, I think, by the virtue of, like, each season, the kind of noose is tightening around Barry and the pressures on him. And so I think in doing that and just kind of writing it, just going step by step, it just started to go that way. And especially what happened at the end of season two, where season two was his kind of, you know, we always said it's like an alcoholic saying, I'm not going to drink. And then the last scene of season two is him going on a bender after watching him not have a drink all season. In season three, he's very much kind of, you know, at a loss. We find him at the beginning very much at a loss. Mm. And as he always, you know, kind of in the pilot was like, you know, he's always trying to find a purpose when he doesn't really have a purpose. I think that's funny, but...
Oh, yeah. Rock bottom is hilarious.
Rock plotting is hilarious. Yeah.
Did you consider integrating the pandemic into the show?
No, we had a talk with HBO and I just was like, the last thing I want to see right now is people in masks and stuff like that. And then it becomes like a whole other thing. So I think on some level I was hoping that, oh, if we have masks, then people will know it was during the pandemic. I think it was my own hoping that this thing would end and be a thing in history.
Well, I don't know if you watched And Just Like That, but that's what they did.
They had it in
They basically, it starts and everybody is like, wasn't the pandemic crazy? And now we're all, and now it's over and we're back to regular life.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, that's great.
And it works in that show. I mean, it's a very heightened reality. I mean, Barry is too, but a different...
A different, sadder reality, yeah.
Slightly, yeah. Slightly sadder. So, yeah, I've seen the first four episodes. I don't want to get into specifics because I think this is going to be out there before the season has premiered. But what would you say to sort of set the stage for people who remember where season two ends with Henry Winkler finding out that Barry killed his girlfriend? It's a very Henry Winkler playing Gene Cousineau. It's a very emotional, like, enormous revelation, and it's going to have reverberations, I'm sure, through the rest of the season. So yeah, where do we find everybody at the beginning of season three?
Well, Barry's, you know, he's a bit at a loss. He's still trying to figure out what his purpose is. I think he still hasn't really recovered. It's been about 6 months since the last, you know, where we saw everybody at the end of season two. And Barry and Sally are in very different places. Her career is in a very... the best place it's ever been. And she has a lot of responsibility and kind of, you know, is doing what she's always wanted to be doing. And Barry, on the other hand, is on the couch playing video games. And then Gene Cousineau is still reeling from what he found out from at the end of season two and is trying to get someone to do something about it, you know. And then NoHo Hank is NoHo Hank, you know.
Yeah, I loved his...
struggling, you know?
Mm-hmm. Everybody is struggling, yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely don't want to spoil anything, but I do want to mention that there's a character this season who is a showrunner and is writing mm-hmm. and directing and acting. And I have to ask how much of that was informed by your experience.
Very much so in some ways. There's a specific shot in the first episode that's this kind of long shot. That person coming into work, and that very much is how it feels sometimes. But also, it's very much hopefully to that character's own kind of journey, and their thing's much more personally vulnerable than what I do. So I think that was another layer to put on it.
Mm-hmm. It does seem like one of the big themes of that is just like the pressure of having to make a billion decisions all of the time. Is that...
Yeah, it is true to life. Yeah, you're constantly being asked questions and then, yeah, action. And then you have to be acting, and it's a lot of pressure. It's weird. People always ask me, like, how do you do all the jobs? And to me, it just feels like one job. You know, it's just kind of making all these decisions. And I think if I split them up into different categories, it would get too overwhelming. You know, it almost feels like, because the writing will bleed into the directing and the directing bleeds into the acting. And, you know, it all is one kind of stew of decisions. But the nice thing is that I've been on other things where I'm just an actor and you don't get, you know, that kind of autonomy over things. And it's nice to be able to try something and it's not working within the scene and you can change it and try to make it work. Or an actor has an idea and you can incorporate that into it. And you know how to, you can be a little bit more malleable when you're wearing all those hats to make the thing work.
Mm-hmm. And having done this for three seasons now and worn so many hats, do you feel more confident doing all of these things at the same time now? Like, do you still kind of feel like someone's going to figure out that I don't know what I'm doing? Is it sort of both?
I feel confident. No, I actually feel, very confident. And it's actually a lot of fun. And I have a great team. You know, Gavin Kleintop is my first AD. And Aida Rogers is the producer. And Carl Hersey is the DP this season. And just the whole kind of unit when we're shooting is just wonderful. that helps me. So it's very much like a team.
I'm Chris Murphy.
I'm Richard Lawson.
And I'm Hilary Busis. We are from Vanity Fair's Still Watching podcast. Next up, we're watching the new HBO show, The Regime.
Madam Chancellor, let's keep the gloves on.
This is not a confrontation. We're just saying what's true.
Academy Award winner Kate Winslet is our chancellor as she leads a faux European autocracy in turmoil.
We'll be watching week by week as The Regime unravels.
And we'll be talking to the stars along the way.
New episodes of Still Watching will drop every Sunday after The Regime airs.
This message comes from Apple Card. Earn up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase, every day. Then, grow it at 4.50% annual percentage yield when you open a savings account with Apple Card. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card subject to credit approval. Savings available to Apple Card owners subject to eligibility. Savings accounts provided by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, member FDIC. Terms apply. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How is your social battery right now? What's the right amount of socializing for you? And how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/littlegoldmen today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp. HELP.com/littlegoldmen.
So we mentioned Gene Cousineau already and Henry Winkler. And one of the things that I love about this season is he's obviously very sympathetic. He's been through a lot. He's dealing with this enormous revelation. But there's also this running thread of learning how kind of despised he is in the Hollywood community and like what an asshole he's been to so many different people.
Yeah.
Henry seems like just the nicest person in the world. Yeah. Like, what's his reaction to like having to go these places?
I think it's hard for him, you know. It's not his character at all, you know. Just him as a person, he's just very loving. But, you know, there's some scenes in the season, especially later in the season, they're really emotional and pretty brutal. Those were tough for him. You know, he's like, I've never gone to this kind of place before. I really respected him for going there and really committing to it. But you're right. The other stuff, too, him just being so unlikable, you know, finding out about his past is really fun. And I think Barry and Cousineau are both men who've done a lot of awful things. You know, I think one of the big things is like, is forgiveness, is redemption like a thing? Can you truly be redeemed, or all the consequences and the consequences on the consequences? You know, it's a thing that kind of has happened through, you know, since the beginning of time, you know, that kind of cycle of violence, not just physical violence, but emotional violence and, you know, all these things that were probably rolling around my head for the past couple of years and in the writer's room as well when you're talking about it, you know, kind of a feeling and, you know, and the themes, it's not like we start with these themes and then it happens. It was just like, as you write it, you kind of go like, oh, that's interesting. All these things are kind of organically flowing together. But that was one thing we discovered in working in season three and reworking it, was this weird parallel between Cousineau and Barry's past.
Yeah, it's funny to think, like, there's Barry, obviously, who's a murderer, and NoHo Hank and Fuchs, too, and Gene is this kind of famous jerk to everybody that he meets. But we at VF, we did an interview with Sarah Goldberg a few years ago where she was talking about how Sally is the character that gets labeled unlikable by a lot of people, which I just think and I mean, she said something in that interview that I feel like really resonated, where it was something like, we have this endless appetite for male violence and like this huge allergy to female ambition. Like somehow that is.
Yeah, no,
seen
that is
as, like,
true. And it happens on all sides, too, which is really funny. There's a very funny clip, I think, of me at a Google event, and this girl stands up and it's like, Sally sucks so bad and she's so this and that. And I say, well, you know, she's based on me. Your face dropped, and I was like, but it is funny because it's like, yeah, she's just ambitious and she doesn't really apologize. You know, the thing when we're writing Sally, and Sarah's so smart too and playing her, is like, it doesn't work if she's mean. It works if she's being honest.
Yeah, she's not malicious. She's just kind of, she's self-absorbed.
She's self-absorbed and she's just being honest. Like, and you see that self-absorption in Hollywood. I mean, Cousineau's the same way. Barry's the same way. I mean, he's super self-absorbed. He's always out for himself. I mean, that's the thing when season one, where when he kills Chris, people go, God, I can't believe he did that. And I'm like, well, because he doesn't want to get caught. You know what I mean? Everybody's always like, oh, he's such a nice guy and everything. We're like, God, I feel so bad for Barry. I'm like, he just shot a guy who
he
was
just shot his friend. Yeah.
He shot his friend who was completely innocent, who was like, I have a wife and kid, please don't do this. And he did it anyway because he doesn't want to get caught, you know? So it is interesting, the reaction to the hate for Sally. And then the thing I've said before, never in my career ever have I ever been called attractive until I was killing people on Barry. And I had three journalists going, I've never found you attractive, but I got to say,
and Barry, you're like, thanks.
And I'm like, oh, I had to murder people and be like a really unlikable character for you to say. I was like, I thought I was, you know, super bad. No, and then, you know, as the season goes on, not to give anything away, but there's also parts of that character, Sarah's character, where she goes through a lot. And in that, too, it's, if this was a male character, there'd be no question we would go here. Mm-hmm. But because it's Sally, it turns into this, will she be likable? What will people think? And it's just, you know, it's kind of silly.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. It's always me doing, you know, or you know, oh, she, Barry is such a bad boyfriend. We should, you know, it'd be great if, you know, she had a guy there that she liked. And it's like, okay, if we were writing this as a man, why do we, would you be like, oh, let's bring a girl in that he would like? It always becomes about a dude. So, you know, it's a thing. You're always, it's very weird. Yeah. She's right though.
I mean, and speaking of, you know, hearing people say, you know, Barry is such a nice guy, even in the face of him shooting Chris, which I feel like is it, there are, he does a lot of unforgivable things, but that does stand out,
you know,
as
the one where we all were like, I wonder if anybody's going to be able to, we're going to lose people here. Yeah.
But so knowing that you haven't lost people, is there a line that he can cross that will cause people to turn against him?
I mean, I don't know. Episode 2 this season, he does some really terrible stuff. There's some terrible stuff in episode 2. He threatens some terrible shit in episode 2 this season. And, you know, we watch it. It's all like, but it feels honest, you know? It's like, no, this is the guy we're dealing with here, you know? And again, his, like, he thinks he's self-aware, but he's really not self-aware at all. The fact that you recognize you were terrible doesn't really erase
it. It's not enough, yeah.
It's not enough to say you're terrible. And I think all that was rolling around in our heads, or at least my head, just over the past couple of years, you know? A lot of people apologizing, you know, and that finding its way into the show. And you
yeah,
know.
Barry could release a statement and say, like, I am extremely sorry for my actions.
I'm very sorry for murdering Chris and murdering Janice Moss and murdering all these
offending
people.
Anybody was not my intention.
I didn't mean to offend anybody by murdering all these people. But no, I mean, It's just trying to play it as honestly as we can. And, you know, I think a thing I always say is, you know, I love the movie Goodfellas. And I remember watching that movie and going, man, this is such a great, what a cool group of people. And then he kills Spider, and Joe Pesci kills Spider. There's that scene with Ray Liotta and Lauren Bracco where she has a gun in his face and he takes it away from her and it gets really scary and he puts it in her face and it's just awful. And you're like, oh, yeah, these aren't nice people.
Yeah, maybe that is sort of what it takes, is like seeing him hurting people that we've gotten to know through the show.
Yeah, really care about, maybe, I don't know. But yeah, this season is that starts to happen for sure.
Mm-hmm. And this season there, I don't know if this changes, but there isn't as much focus on the acting class. You've spun out from that. Is there a reason why you kind of wanted to explore other avenues? Was that just like the natural like direction that the story took?
It was just the natural thing. I think the last two seasons ended with the acting class show. And I think when we started this season, I think the first thing we said, I think everybody was like, can we just not have an acting? We can't end the season with an acting class show. We did that the last two seasons. And then it just kind of morphed into, the classes. As the season starts, I mean, this is in the trailer. I think the sign is in the trailer, so you, but it's closed, you know?
Yeah.
It kind of organically made sense to kind of go that way. But then, it let us kind of branch out and go into different areas, which were a little bit more interesting when we were writing.
Mm-hmm. And you yourself have not taken an acting class like that. Like you sat in on them while you were writing the show. But I mean, I'm sort of curious, how do you feel like you would have done in an acting class like this, where, you know, you're being broken down and built back up and asked to tap into your trauma on stage?
I'd probably be terrible at it, but also I would not be very good at it. I would have the armor of acting like I was being vulnerable, but not really being vulnerable, because I was like, I don't know you people, you know? And that's why I was in improv classes, because it was just about being funny and exploring stuff. Yeah, I got to feel very comfortable in order to go there. And the idea of, like Cousineau does in the pilot to Sally, is someone yelling at me and screaming at me to get me to a place, I don't think I would react well to that.
As a director, do you think that is like a useful method?
No, but it's interesting because I have worked with actors now when I'm directing that are like, yeah, I need something. And as an actor too, you know, where people like you're in an argument and someone's mad, it's like, oh, can you, you know, yell at me before the take or something to give me something to be, you know, but it has to be kind of like a consensual thing instead of those stories you hear of directors slapping people before they, you know.
And then being like, use that, go.
Punching them in the face and going, go. I don't really get that. Or mostly everybody I work with, for the most part, you just stay out of their way and give them very specific notes. As an actor, I always like things that are simple and hyper-specific. And you're like, oh, I can play that. And I've done it myself as a director. You go up and you start to say something. You really don't know what it is and you don't know how to communicate it. So as you're talking, you can just see their eyes just glaze over. And you're like, I'm confusing you now. I'm going to shut up. You know?
Well, if the goal was to make them act confused, then.
Yeah, maybe that was it. Yeah. Or sometimes you give someone a prop or something to give it a little something. I remember Jesse Hodges in the last episode of season two, she was doing a scene with Sally and she wanted to be like, oh, how do I show that I'm telling her that the show's going to go great, but then I'm nervous. And then we gave her this piece of paper to be ripping up while she's doing it. And she was just really funny doing that. And it's like, you know, you give suggestions like, oh, do you want to rip this up? And she was like, oh yeah, let me try that. And then she was really funny doing it. You know, it's like little things like that, but it's never like, come on, you moron. I would not react well.
Even pretending to say it, I can tell your heart's not in it.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah, I can't even, I don't even know where you start with that stuff. Yeah. I think it's very antiquated, old school. There's that footage of Stanley Kubrick with Shelley Duvall in The Shining where he's like yelling at her and making her feel stupid because it's getting, you know, that's all bullshit.
Yeah, the idea that you have to hurt somebody in real life in order for them
to... That's not about her, that's about his ego. That's his ego. And I like Kubrick movies, but when I watched that when I was 20, it was like, oh, okay, yeah. And then you start doing this and you're like, what the fuck? What? Why would you ever need to do that? That's their ego.
I'm Alex Schwartz.
I'm Nomi Fry.
I'm Vincent Cunningham, and this is Critics at Large, a New Yorker podcast for the culturally curious.
Each week, we're going to talk about a big idea that's showing up across the cultural landscape, and we'll trace it through all the mediums we love: books, movies, television, music, art.
And I always want to talk about celebrity gossip, too.
Of course.
What are you guys excited to cover in the next few months?
There's a new translation of the Iliad that's coming out, Emily Wilson. Oh. Really excited to see whether I can read the Iliad again, whether I'm that literate. I mean, the jury is out.
I can't wait to hear Adam Driver go again in an Italian accent in Michael Mann's Ferrari.
He can't stop.
I mean, and bless him. I can't wait.
Molto bene.
Molto bene.
We hope you'll join us for new episodes each Thursday. Follow Critics at Large today, wherever you get podcasts.
You really don't want to miss this.
Don't.
Don't miss this.
Don't miss it.
See you soon.
And so you directed 5 episodes of this season?
Yeah.
Do you think that come season 4, you want to do all 8?
Yes, I would like to do, yeah. I think, I don't know if I'm allowed to say it. Can I? Okay, I am, but I don't know if you're allowed to, allowed to say that.
You can put it out there.
I think I am, but yeah, I love directing. I love directing. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I always wanted to do. So it's fun to learn every time, you know, trying these things. And the show has kind of morphed and become a little bit, you know, darker and a little bit more cinematic with each season. And you know, this season, especially later in the season, there's a lot of stuff that I tried with VFX and things like that. That was just fun, you know. Mm-hmm. So
is there an outlier along the lines of Ronnie and Lily, which was the season 2 episode that was like a weird, surreal, almost not a standalone?
Really. No, not really. There's like sequences that are kind of crazy, but not a full episode. No,
I guess this is, since the acting class is not as big of a part of the show now, this is more about your previous experience. But is it tougher to be acting badly on purpose or to direct people to act badly on purpose? Like, how do you direct bad acting? Do you say like, be worse?
You know what? You kind of just let people do it and they know how to do it. I don't think I've given a direction on how to act bad. You know, it's like they're all just very good. We hire very good actors to do it. When I try to act bad, I think a lot of it is you're just memorizing lines. I think of being, I don't know, like I just remember being in elementary school and you would have to memorize like a poem. Mm-hmm. And I would think about that where you gave it nothing. You were just, I just want to say the words in the right order, you know, and so that's the kind of feeling.
Yeah. And so with season 4 written, do you have in you and Alec Berg, do you have in your heads like an ideal number of seasons that you want the show to last?
No, not yet. No, we're just taking it literally one scene at a time.
Although I guess, I mean, it does seem like it's a heightened reality, but does it feel like there's, you know, a point at which like Barry continuing to get away with it feels like it could be getting too much?
Yeah. Yeah. You start to go, come on. You know, I think when you have a idea like this, there is kind of like that's what I mean by one scene at a time. You want to be honest and real, and you don't want to, I don't like that when I watch shows where you could feel like they're perpetuating a thing because of the order, not because of the show. You know, so
yeah, where Dexter is on for like 11 seasons and somehow every police officer in the entire country is just completely incompetent.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't do that. It's more interesting when people are good at their job and then you kind of go, geez, what will happen? Which is what happened with Janice Moss at the end of episode or season 1, mm-hmm. where like you should make people good at their job and not make them bad just because that helps, again, the order. So
yeah, and it seems a lot more challenging. It seems a lot more challenging to write yourself out of a corner that you've like painted.
Yeah, we do that all the time, and I think it's more interesting. But yeah, it's definitely that's why I say like one scene at a time, you know, and trying to be real with it and not be precious about stuff.
Mm-hmm. And think, okay, as much as I'm enjoying this and what we're doing, like maybe it's best for the project if we
who knows. Yeah, it has to get to that place at some point. Yeah.
And this is off topic of Barry, but since I have you, I'm curious, the season 4 of Documentary Now has been announced. It seems like there are a lot of really great parodies that are going to happen in it. I just read the description of The Monkey Grifter and it made me laugh out mm-hmm. loud. And I just wanted to see if you could say anything about how involved you are in it.
I have to be honest, I'm not that involved as much at all because of Barry. We did a retreat like in 2019 and we talked about it because everyone's schedules are so busy, but it really is Reese Thomas and Alex Buono. I mean, those guys are the ones that make that show what it is. And and I had a lot of fun performing with Fred and writing on it stuff, but I've seen stills from the season, so I'm kind of a producer on it, but Barry takes up my life, so that's very much those guys are doing amazing work, and I've seen stills from a lot of the stuff, and it looks amazing. Just the technology from when we started season one to now is leaps and bounds. It is insane. Like, it was breathtaking, some of the footage I saw. I did not realize it was us. I was like, it fully tricked me, where I was like, oh, Fred walked in, and I was like, oh my God, oh, what? I thought it was a reference shot for something. So it's pretty unreal.
Well, it's exciting to get that we get it at all.
I'm just happy that they make it. Yeah. When we pitched it, we were like, we're only getting to make this because Portlandia was on IFC and that's it, because no one would want to make this in a million years. And I still think the Thin Blue Line episode we did is one of my favorite things I've ever been involved with ever in my career. I just think that thing is perfect. Fred is so funny in that episode, and all the actors in it are so good. And Reese and Alex just outdid themselves with that episode, I thought.
Yeah. The company one is the one that is closest to my heart. But
oh, yeah. Well, that's Mulaney. That's all Mulaney. That thing's unreal. Yeah, that thing's just Richard Kind. And yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think I should probably let you go. But I do have one last question, which will make sense to people once they see the season of Barry. But it's who do you think should play the next Spider-Man?
Ben Mendelsohn.
So obvious.
So obvious, Ben Mendelsohn.
That does it for today's interview segment. We'll be back on Thursday with our regular show. I'll be joining our colleague Chris Murphy to finally go over the true nitty-gritty postmortem of this year's Oscars and hopefully look ahead a little bit and talk about some new movies and TV shows as well. So in the meantime, you can find us at vanityfair.com. You can follow us on Twitter at littlegoldmen. You can sign up to text with us at subtext. Join subtext.com/littlegoldmen or text 718-550-2059. This episode, as always, was edited and produced by Brett Fuchs.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR. From PR.